Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right on the Edge on One Radio. Join us as we feature GLBT, erotica, and BDSM characters, issues, and authors. We don't have to tie them up or flog them to ask them questions that make them squirm or makes them hot, though we're open to doing that anyway. We record new shows every Thursday at 10 p.m. Central. This show is intended for an adult audience since we do encourage saucier conversations, riskier subjects, and here is where taboo is on the to-do list. Get taken right on the edge.
Good evening and welcome to Right on the Edge. I am W.T. Prater, your host, and I am flying solo tonight. As a host, I have no co-host, sad face. But that's okay because I have authors to keep me entertained. So tonight, for your delight and pleasure, we have with us Miss Tempest O'Reilly. Hello, Tempest. How are you, darling?
Hello. Having fun already, huh?
I wasn't expecting that. And we also have with us Joe Constantino. Did I say it right? I know that
Constantino.
You don't put the pauses in there, but...
I wouldn't say Constantino. I would say Constantino.
Got it. And so I am so honored and pleased to be interviewing both of you at the same time. This is, I wish I could say this was my first three-way, but it's really not, so why not about it? This may be my first three-way with a girl in the middle, but I don't even know that that's really the truth. So for anybody who's out there who is listening and is not familiar with you guys, I want to start off by giving each one of you about 30 seconds or so to tell people who you are and perhaps maybe you, what you're most known for as far as your work of art. Let's start off with Tempe on this one.
Hi, Tempest O'Reilly, obviously. Everything I write is... gay erotic romance. My most known would be my Desires Entwined series that started back in 2003 with the Designs of Desire and recently had Temptations of Desire added to it. I also have my Cage Sanctuary that came out this last December and is my first full BDSM erotic.
Very nice. And we, as you can tell, love our BDSM erotica, so we'll be talking about that very, very shortly. And Joe, tell people a little bit about you.
Well, as my mother, who's 90 in New Jersey, says, I'm a legend in my own mind. But aside from that, I have a very amazing sort of shift. I started as an actor. And I worked with Bruce Willis and Nathan Lane and Rosie O'Donnell and Jason Robards and Holland Taylor and did film, television, theater. Then I became a playwright and college professor, and now I'm starting new as a novelist, and my novella, my MM novella, An Infatuation from Dream Spinner Press, has been getting rave reviews all over the place, and I have a mystery novel series from Whiskey Creek Press, the Jana Lane Mysteries, and Paper Doll is the first one. That's just come out. And Porcelain Doll come out in 6 months. And then I have an MM mystery comedy series coming from Lethe Press starting this summer with Drama Queen, about a gay college theater professor who solves crimes. So I wonder where I got that from. But it's new for me, but I'm writing fast and getting great reviews, and so I'm thrilled.
Very cool. Well, I have to say, you know, I have a theater background. Obviously, anybody who follows me on Facebook knows this. I'm actually in a production that opened last weekend. And so, yeah, we'll definitely have to talk about some theater stuff because I...
What production? Don't leave us hanging. Tell us what production.
Oh, I'm doing A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and I'm Hysterium, so it's a lot of
good.
Fun. And we'll talk to you. Yeah.
Very nice.
I love that production.
Yes. Me too. Good show.
It is,
I thought you were going to say, given the show, I thought you were going to say, let my people come or something like
that. No, but that would be a great name of a book. So we might have to, you know, talk about All right, so let's start off with something light. Let's go to a question. Let's see, Tempe, if you could have your work translated, what would be your preference, TV, movie, play, or Broadway?
Goodness, don't ask anything difficult. I'd have to go with television, probably, because I like the whole serial concept.
Yes, absolutely. And tell us which work and who would you have star in it? We're going to ask you about your boy toys, the pretty boy toys in your head. Who are they?
See, I didn't hear the first half of your question. I got stuck on the word boy toy.
Which work and what boy toy?
Which work would probably have to be Designs of Desire. It's my first book and my absolute favorite out of all those that I've written so far. Definitely always got my favorite boys in it. As far as who to play them, oh goodness. I don't know the names of actors very well.
Kathleen,
I don't watch movies.
Just say Joe Cosentino. I'll take the part, whatever it is.
There you go. You can be one of my guys.
Yeah, I'll be the lead. You can tie me up like 50 Shades of Grey. I don't care. Do whatever you want.
See, you'd have to be in my cage sanctuary as...
I need you to send me a headshot and maybe a naked shot. I need to make sure that's the correct body type. So if you could just forward that to my email address, and that would be,
sure.
be great.
I'll be the casting
director for you.
Yes, I'll be very happy. The cover, what I tell people, the cover of An Infatuation has a very nice-looking guy with the shirt off. And so I tell people that's me, but, you know, it's just somebody else's head on my body.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I can do the same thing.
So I'm gonna do some one-hand reading real quick, and then I'll be back to you guys. All right. So the same question to you, Joe. If you were to pick one of your works, which of the four medium would you choose, and which work, and who would you cast in it?
Well, because I was an actor and playwright, all of my books are very theatrical. They have tons of humor and romance and tragedy and mystery, and they're surprises, and I write them thinking of the movies because I want them all to be movies. So my answer is movies, and I guess the one I'll pick is An Infatuation. Because it's about somebody who had this infatuation on this gorgeous, muscular Italian guy when he was in high school. But then since then, he's gotten married to a man. And now at his high school reunion, the gorgeous, muscular guy, Mario, from high school, has now in the reunion and might be interested in him. And what does he do? Because he's happily married. So I would cast Mario Lopez as Mario. First of all, it's the same name. So if you said on the set... Mario, he would answer, so that would be good. But I think physically he fits with those dimples and those muscles. You know, I could totally see him play that part. I think he'd be great. And I want to be in it, too. I want to be in it, too. I want to play Mr. Ringwood, the high school teacher.
Okay.
So what were you,
well,
what were you saying,
Tim? Well, I have to tell you that one of my biggest crushes when I was in high school, and maybe a little bit beyond that, is I always fantasized about A.C. Slater and Zach Morris getting together. For me, they were the perfect couple. So,
Yeah, that'd be good.
Definitely.
We can
cast
them.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a great idea.
And if you ever saw Breaking the Surface, it actually had Mario Lopez as Greg Louganis. So he is afraid to play a gay role, which I love about him.
Yes, he's very gay friendly, and that's another reason I like him. And I know you only said one, but Drama Queen, which is coming out in the summer from Alethi Press, the one with the gay college theater professor solving crimes, I want Matt Bomer. because I love him.
Oh,
I just
my God.
I want, first of all, you know, because he is gay and he's married and he has kids and he's a good actor and good looking, and so I've already cast him in that. Just, I know you only said one, but I threw that in anyway.
No, that's fine, because I wouldn't even want to have sex with Matt Bomer. I would just want him to look at me for a couple of hours.
Yes,
I
feel the same way.
Like, oh, my God. Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you wouldn't feel guilty, because I'm married, and I would never cheat on my spouse. But if you just looked at Matt Bomer naked for a while, that's not cheating. That's just looking.
Yes.
That's looking. That is not at all the same thing.
Right.
Yes.
I mean,
it is inspiration.
You know.
I have to
right.
I have to see the male
there
anatomy in order for me to be able to write it. So, yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
It's research.
There's a convention. There is a convention
that
I
research and inspiration. That's okay.
Yes. There is a convention that I go to every year called GRL, Gay Rom Lit. It's probably the one I talk about the most on the show because it's the only convention currently that I attend every year. And I have been trying to be an advocate of this panel that I think would be hugely successful, which is basically you hire two guys to have sex in front of a panel of writers and have them just write what they're seeing, because it's just, I think that would just be great, and it would be all about the inspiration and the, you know, we'd put down towels everywhere and it would just, it would be completely, okay. So with that in mind, how did each of
you
approach writing sex scenes? Let's start with Joe on this one.
Okay, this is a great question because An Infatuation has love scenes but not sex scenes. However, Drama Queen does have sex scenes. So this is perfect because I find the hardest scenes to write are the sex scenes because there's, you know, I mean, even, for example, you know, Drama Queen is a mystery, so you have all your clues and your red herrings and your hidden clues and your reversals and the big shock ending. Is actually easier for me to plot all that out. Most people can't do that, but I can do that. And the humor is easy. The love is easy. The drama, the sadness is easy. What's so hard for me are the sex scenes, because how many ways, maybe Tempe will explain this better, but how many ways can you write about having sex? You know, you run out. I mean, you write it and you go, this is beautiful, this is nice. But then you write the next one, you think, you know, what can I say that is, you don't want your reader to be bored. You want them to have a new experience. So what can I say to make it a little different? It is difficult. It definitely is. Now, if Matt Bomer and Mario Lopez were having sex in front of me, I could probably write it. So maybe we should arrange for that.
Yes. Yes. Can you video that and send it over to me, or just let me know when it's happening and I will fly to wherever I need to go to see that
That's
happen.
That's right. But I want to hear Tempe, too, because it's difficult.
What do you think?
Writing
Tempe?
The sex scene? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Extremely
yeah.
difficult.
Yeah.
And not just because I don't have the right body parts. It's, as Joe said, it's the whole, how do I make it hot, not, okay, we just did that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I try to get creative.
Well,
I don't write the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely have my guys get a little bit more creative at times. What one does, another one does not. And yes, I reread all of my sex scenes before I write the next one, just to make sure I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely gets, it's like, okay, now I want them to do such and such, but no, I did it that way already.
Right.
I know.
Right.
That's like the only part of the stories I usually pre-plot.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm totally advanced on everything else.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to repeat yourself.
I have three different types of sex scenes that I generally have. there's ones that I just completely skip over. So, like, I'll be reading a story, and it'll get to a sex scene, and I just skip over the sex scene. Wherever it starts, I skip to the end of it because there's no plot. There's no anything in there. It's very obvious that the author put the sex scene in there because either A, they just wanted it in there, or B, and a publisher told them they needed to have a sex scene, and so they threw it in there. And
right.
then there's the second type of sex scenes, which are the ones that I actually will read, but they don't do anything for me. They're just kind of like, oh, okay, that was a sex scene, okay, and then you get
right.
to it. And then I have what I call my one-hand reading sex scene. And they're the ones that actually, like, rev my engine. They're the ones that I will actually type to an author and tell an author, just so you know, I want to let you know that your stuff is hot. And I don't
right.
want to be, like, gross and whatever. And I know that one-hand reading is probably gross anyway. But I will openly tell an author, okay, just so you're aware, this was one-hand reading material. Because
yeah.
And most of the time, it has the same type of thing as when you're watching a movie. Like, if you are invested in the characters and they have a sex scene, it's incredible. If you have two
right.
characters that you don't really care about and they're having
right.
a sex scene, you're just kind of like, eh, good sex scene,
right.
but eh, didn't really do anything for me. And then you
right.
have the sex
but
scenes that are just uncomfortable and you fast forward through them. That is
right.
very similar to that.
But you know what it is, Will? I mean, I don't write erotica, so I'm not a specialist, but I know as a reader, and even the sex scenes I've written in my stories, what is sexy is in the mind. It's the characters
yeah.
and their emotions and their feelings and
yeah.
the story, as you said. That's what makes it sexy. It's not describing body parts. That's not what it is.
Yeah.
It's the emotion behind it and what's happening in their hearts, really. Don't you agree, Tempe? I mean, isn't that?
Definitely.
I think
in fact,
like,
the only times that you'll find sex in my books, even though there is sex in every single one,
mm-hmm.
the only time that you find any kind of parts touching at all, there's actually
mm-hmm.
a reason in
right.
the mind, the heart, and actual
right.
plot point. It's,
right.
you know, this scene is important because, okay, yeah, it's hot, there's lots of grunting, but there's actually a real reason for it here. I don't
right.
do just sex for the point of sex, because I mean, if I want to do that, I just, you know, flip on a
right.
porn station.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. There has to be a reason. Yeah.
I want story, not just sex.
Right. Right. Right.
I think that there's a way to write even hot, rough sex, but still attach the reader to your character enough that they can still find it, they can still find it enticing, even if they're not, like, incredibly invested in the character.
Right.
Maybe that's
well,
my
I hope
thing.
So. Otherwise, my latest book has no point.
Right.
Because trust me, it gets some
yeah.
very rough sex in there. I mean, hello, it's a BDSM book.
Uh-huh.
But I definitely got a little interesting and a little creative with a few of my scenes, especially the
mm-hmm.
sex one, since my character has no use of his legs, and he's
mm-hmm.
the bottom.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you're the sub and your legs don't work, you definitely have to get creative. But trust me, it's still got some very, very heavy kink going.
Mm-hmm.
But there's
yeah,
still
yeah.
always a point to it.
So,
well, yeah, it's always story. It's always the story.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
And Tammy, this is an interesting segue, because obviously anybody who's met you, now, do you have partial use of your legs, or you have no use of your legs whatsoever?
I do have use of my legs. What I don't have is use of my joints. They fall apart.
Okay.
I actually have the disorder.
Gotcha.
That James has in my very first book, I have Ehlers-Danlos. It means that my joints won't stay together. So things like walking is kind of hard when your hips pop out of joint constantly.
Right.
It makes it really
so,
hard. So, yes, I'm actually in a wheelchair, and originally I was on forearm crutches. So I do tend to kind of weave that into my stories, too.
Which I'm
wow.
grateful for, because I get tired of reading characters that are completely imperfect or have, like, one little character flaw and that's it. I want to read somebody
yeah.
who I can relate to physically as well as mentally. So my question
yeah.
to both of you is, have you ever met somebody in real life, or maybe a stranger that you met, that you just, you know, their personality or their physicality or whatever and you turn them into a character in one of your books. Let's start off with you, Joe, and then I'm going to ask you, Tempe, the same question.
Sure. Is it allowed for me to talk about a heterosexual character? Okay.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Because
absolutely.
My Jana Lane series, it starts with Paper Doll, is about an ex-child movie star who was attacked on the studio lot when she was 18. She left the business, and now at 38, she is being attacked again, and she's got to go back to Hollywood and figure out exactly what went on, and it's a whole mystery and a whole story. And there's some romance, too. No sex scenes, but love scenes. And I have always been in love with Hayley Mills. I've seen her movies 100 times. I absolutely adore her. And I pattern the character after her, Jana after her, and this whole series. Not that, she's way older than 38 now, but I patterned it after her as a tribute to her because I just have always adored her and thought, you know, she was amazing. That would be an example of a celebrity. In terms of people I've met, yeah, I mean, Infatuation, Harold, the lead, is patterned after me. His spouse, Stuart, is patterned after my spouse, my husband. And Mario, the Infatuation, is a conglomeration of a number of hot, muscular guys that I met when I was an actor and got to know a little bit and sort of put them together into this one amazing guy. And I do it all the time. When I see, I mean, the Drama Queen series takes place in a college, and I'm a college professor. I teach theater, where college professors are being murdered. And so everyone, all the faculty and students at my college are kidding me that when I'm going to kill them, you know, the next time, kill them. Because each book has about 5 murders. So anybody who ticks me off, I just kill them, you know, in the next book to get rid of them. And
well,
so they're all laughing.
Well, that's one way to do it and keep out of prison. So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, I just do it in a book.
Keep out of prison than to do it.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, everybody I meet, I'm thinking about it. And I think that's why my books ring true, because of that. And I'm sure Tempe will talk about it too. But when you base a character on a real person, you've got flaws, you've got real emotions, you can describe them. I mean, you change the name. I've even sometimes changed the gender or the race, but, you know, they're real for me. I hear them talking, I see them, I know what they look like, I know what they smell like, and it does make a difference.
Absolutely. What do you think about the You would say all the
Hello?
Various ways that you can say your name. I made her speechless. Yes. Speechless.
No, it's called the phone completely clicked out, so I couldn't hear you, hon. I heard nothing you just said.
Do you want me to say your names all over again, just so I could...
No, it's okay. Everybody knows that I have a split personality when it comes to my name. It's okay, honey. When it comes to people that end up in my books, yes, many of them are based on people that I've actually met, sometimes people that I actually even know. One of the characters that has been in, oh, goodness, he was in Desire's Guardian, and he's actually one of the main characters in the current story I'm working on is based off of an old college professor I had that I absolutely adored and thought he would make a lovely gay man. And his wife didn't agree, but I thought he would. So in my reality, I've decided that he's actually a very hot gay guy who just needs to find the right loving partner. But because I dealt with him for so long in so many classes, you know, part of the stuff that goes into him is, well, I know what the actual guy was like. Well, let me see. How can I translate that? It's, you know, it makes it more real for me, which makes it easier for me to write it for others. And sometimes that gets really interesting when they're not quite perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
isn't it fun to change? I'm sorry, I'm trying to say, isn't it fun to change
them? It's terribly fun to change them.
Yeah, to change a sexual orientation. I've done that a lot, and that is so much fun. to write that.
Actually, a couple of my straight characters are gay people I know.
Yeah.
And I decided, you know, that just doesn't work for me. We're going to make you straight.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a couple of guys think it's hilarious that I've got them married off.
Yeah.
Women. They're
I've
like,
done it
you know,
the other
that,
way.
That wouldn't happen. It's like, yeah, but it works in the story.
Yeah. I've done it the other way. I've made straight people I know gay in the story, and that's really fun. Because,
well, like I said, with my one character that I'm working on right now, trust me, I met his lovely wife. And if there was any man who could possibly be any more head over heels for his wife than my old professor, I don't think I've ever met them.
Mm-hmm.
However, I always thought that he would make a lovely gay man. So in my story, that is exactly what he is.
But do you tell them I've never told any, because I change their names and sometimes
their
physicality. Do you? I've never told them. Have you ever told anybody this character is based on you?
Well, let me think. No.
Yeah, I haven't.
No,
either.
Because a lot of my characters are also amalgamations of people, so it's not like I could say, "Hey, hon, this character is based directly off of you," because it's actually like five people squished into one.
Right. Right.
Without
That's
the
true,
kink
yes.
part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it's you know, I get to pick and choose my favorite parts of different people and turn them into, you know, the wonderful jerk, the great sweet guy, the whatever I need. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes people inspire it with the, you know, that guy was just so fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm.
You can just take that and run with it. And, well, like you said before, it makes them so much more real in our heads, which makes it easier to put onto paper. Because, I mean,
readers,
making somebody up whole cloth out of your head is a lot harder.
Right. And I found, I don't know if you have, but I found that the readers, for example, with infatuation, the readers just find it so personal and it stays with them and they write to me and they say the story just moved me and stays with me and they want it to be real. They want me to be Harold. They want to know that this really happened to me. And a number of them have said that. And I feel bad to say it didn't, that the characters are based on me and people I know, but the situation didn't actually happen to me. And they wanted to. They want to know that these are real people and this actually happened. And so sometimes
I get
my
the other way.
Do you? Okay.
I do because I interject. Like my first character, he has Ehlers-Danlos, which is the same disorder that I have. So he's on crutches and he's been abused and rejected before because of it pretty badly.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a lot of reader comments even now, even though I've had multiple books since then, I still get reader comments directly emailing me with, you know, wow, it was so, you know, did this really happen to you? Please tell me nobody actually hurt you like that. And it's like, no, they didn't. Yes, the character is loosely based because of the disorder, but really, no, that did not happen. And I'm still waiting for myself to come and sweep me off my feet.
Well, that's nice. They're worried about you.
I'm
that's
waiting for
nice.
My stuff, which I get comments like that of, I wish I had my own stuff. And it's like, you know, when you hear that kind of an answer, it's like, yes, I did something right as an author.
Right, yeah. And they like you and they're worried about you. That's very nice. I mean, mine is a romance, so it's a little different that they're hoping that this happened. Okay. But I mean,
mine are all romances, but there's nasty stuff that's happened usually prior. And I've got a couple that are disabled in different ways. I hate that word. Mm-hmm. I really hate that word. But, you know, you've got your forearm crutches.
Well, we don't say disabled.
Your wheelchair.
We say differently
and
able.
Yes, differently
we
able.
But in there,
differently able.
No.
Able, yeah.
See, here's the catch. When the story starts in their own minds, they're disabled. It's not till the end of the story that they get the concept that they're just differently abled.
Right.
Because if you are somebody who suffers from certain issues, you go through a period, almost everybody does, and sometimes we get stuck there of seeing the problem instead of seeing what we really can still do. I can't walk.
Right.
That becomes this horrible thing, and sometimes people treat you really crappy. Trust me, I can verify that.
Yeah.
And it becomes an I don't want to do, and I don't believe anybody will. So you actually start to see yourself as that disabled concept instead of as who you really are. You start to lose that. So my characters who are differently abled, they start off seeing themselves as mm-hmm. disabled. Mm-hmm. So for right. them, it's not just finding the love, but finding the strength to be who they are, not right. what other people perceive them as because of their tools of mobility, yeah. in my character's cases, which is really good for me because, you know, I've gone through that myself. I went through a stage right. where I absolutely did not want to go out and deal with people because I got sick of the way that they acted. Mm-hmm. You know, hello, my legs don't work. That doesn't mean my brain doesn't work. You know, right. that kind of thing. So I have a couple of my kids who says from that.
You let me know
and
if
have to learn.
Badly, I'll beat them up because I'm not going to.
That's fair.
You just say
yeah, that's
word.
A good point.
I got them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now you saw me at DRL, and that was I have to honestly say that that was the most fun and the best group because not one person acted weird about my wheelchair or my electric chair, which unfortunately is all too
right.
common.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was a wonderful thing for me. And mm-hmm. that's the kind of things that I like to put into my characters is, you know, that acceptance, that growth, that within them, not just the relationship. I don't do the mystery and killing people off as well as Joe. But, well, I do have mystery in two of my books, but it's much, much more low-key. That's not really the point of the story. It's sort of the things that the characters are having to deal with instead, just right. because, you know, mystery writing is not my thing, but I still love it. So I had to go a little bit more with the romance part than the mystery part.
That brings me to my next question. A lot of a lot of authors, once they realize that they have a following in a certain genre, they stick with that genre, come hell or high water. And sometimes it's not something they choose. Sometimes it's something that their publisher chooses for them. How do you guys feel about authors who go into multiple genres, because a lot of the people that we talk to are MM authors, but there are a lot of sub-genres even within the MM market. So how do you feel? Do you feel like once you've marketed yourself as a particular genre, how do you feel about, like, if you decide to go into different genres, should you create an alternate pseudonym, or can you write multiple genres under your name? Let's start off with Joe on this one, and then I want to get your opinion, Tepis.
No problem.
Yeah, I'm a perfect example of this because I have three different publishers, and it's all my name, but three different genres. Because with Dream Spinner Press, I have an Infatuation, which is an MM novella, and I've submitted a couple of more MM novellas, and hopefully they'll publish them. And with Whiskey Creek Press, I have the Jana Lane series, which is an MF. I mean, it's straight. But there's supporting gay characters. Mystery series about Jana Lane. And then with Lethe Press, I have the comedy mystery, the MM comedy mystery, the Nikki and Noah mysteries, starting out with Drama Queen. And the way to do it, if you want to write different genres, is to work with different publishers. Because different publishers have different areas of expertise that they deal with.
Yeah.
And you can use the same name. And I think if you read each of those, you wouldn't believe it was the same author because my voice is very different and my style is very different. They all have the humor and the pathos and some mystery and good characters. But I don't think you would know it was the same person. The style is completely different, and I love that. It's like when I was an actor. I didn't want to play the same part in everything that I did. I mean, one thing, I did an ABC TV movie called My Mother Was Never a Kid with Holland Taylor, and I played a tough, you know, juvenile delinquent, you know, tough guy, which is completely opposite from the commercials I did, where I'd be a nerdy guy with glasses and bow tie, and or plays at musicals I did where I was a clown or whatever. So, you know, actors don't want to be typecast. They don't want to do the same thing. And it's the same thing with writers.
Right.
You don't want to write the same book. Even if you're doing a series, you want to do another series. You don't want to write the same book over and over. And so my advice to people who want to do that is try to reach out to different publishers. And this way you can do different types of things.
Okay.
So we'll hear what Tempe has to say.
Tempe?
Well, I don't like the idea of typecasting, whether it's an actor or in writing. Actually, I have my more contemporary writing. I have my BDSM kink, which slightly overlaps because of my first book was what is referred to as BDSM light. I just love when people put the light on the end of my things. And the story that I'm waiting to hear back right now that I just recently submitted is actually paranormal. I went with sisters, but mine are kitties. So, which is obviously very, very different from anything I've written, since everything else I've written has been real world. And now I'm going and throwing in, you know, cat shifters and vampires, just because I can. But I don't like the idea of being told, oh, well, you've already written blah, 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 therefore that's what you write. It's like, no, try telling that to the characters in my head, because really that's not where they're going.
Right.
And I don't really reach out to different publishers. Dream Spinner Press was my first choice, and when I got my first yes from them, I got the strangest looks from my children because I literally squealed, and I am not ashamed of that. Because that's who I wanted to publish my first book. Now, I do have an entry in a anthology that is not done by Dream Spinner Press. It's actually done by Crushing Heart Black Butterfly, which is a another small press. They do everything. Every kind of genre. Actually, they have a subgroup that's nothing but steampunk, which is fascinating, but I can't write it. But it's my only, well, it's my only YA story at this point is in that anthology. But you know what? It's still under Tempest. I don't want to change my name every time I change my story. That would get way too confusing.
Right.
And I don't need to sit there and have to go, okay, now wait, which name am I being today? That's way more than I want to deal with.
I don't even
I'll put disclaimers on stuff, but that's about as far as I'll go.
I don't even have time to keep up with a personal and a professional Facebook. Everything I do on Facebook is under the same name. I will not be with a publisher who tells me that I can only write in one genre, because all of my ideas come in different ways. Half of them are contemporary. Most of them are sci-fi. A lot of them are humorous. Some of them are very dark. And I just think the more you can do for as an author to make yourself well-rounded, if you want to start off in one particular genre and become known for that genre, then go for it. But Stephen King now can claim he has basically every genre covered under his books. He's no longer a horror writer. He's written romance. He's written paranormal. He's written sci-fi. He's written westerns. I mean, it's pretty varied.
And he's one of my heroes.
Oh, absolutely.
He's one of him and Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
So
yes, I went there with Dr. Seuss. They're not the point.
I want to ask both of you. Like, I probably shouldn't ask this question because it's highly polar questions. Like, people have one opinion or another on this particular question. So now that I've built the question up, you're both going, "What is it? Just say it. Just say it." Okay. How do you feel about authors who say that they don't read? Tempe and then Joe.
Authors that say they don't read.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd want to read their book.
That's
because if you're not reading, I don't know. That just completely warps my mind. I've heard people say that. But seriously, if your occupation, whether it's full-time or part-time, is to be an author, then why are you not also reading? Okay, so you want everybody else to read, but you don't read. Like, no, wait a minute. There's a logic flaw there. But then I think everybody should
totally
read anyway.
Yes. I totally agree.
You know, I'm the mean parent who, you want to go watch that movie? Fine. But you know what? It came from a book. So you need to read the book first. I'm the mean evil parent. My children can tell you all about it. I am very, very big on reading.
I totally agree. One of the nice things about Dream Spinner Press is the authors are so supportive of one another. My book, Infatuation, came out. All the authors put it on their website, and they were all, oh, this is so great. And, you know, when I read their work, they read mine, and they're raving about it. I mean, it's really selfless. They'll put on their own blogs and websites, I read this great book. It was so wonderful, and you've got to check out this author, and just really, really warm and friendly. And, of course, by reading is the way you become a better writer anyway. It's like wanting to be an actor.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like wanting to be an actor
absolutely.
And never seeing a play.
That would make about as much sense in my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Going back to the diversity question, another thing I do is write plays for young audiences. And so that's even more fun, because when you do a play for kids, they let you know immediately what's funny, what isn't, what works, what doesn't. They don't have patience to sit.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. You know, go to the theater. I mean, reading, of course, but, you know, go to the theater, see plays. It, everything isn't just a TV set or a movie.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I want to move in a different direction for just a minute. I want to get some info from Tempest. You said that you've just written your first BDSM novel. Tell us about writing a BDSM novel from your experience. Like, how did you go about researching it? And how do you feel about having published a BDSM novel in a post-Fifty Shades of Grey world?
I never read 50 Shades, so it really didn't affect me any. I wanted to write a story that had a character in a wheelchair, and actually another author friend of mine from DST, who tends to write BDSM, though not exclusively, challenged me to take my idea of the character in the wheelchair and said, fine, make it either a dom or a sub, go. That was the sum total of the start. But I did a lot of research. I practically lived on Fet Life for a while, talking to subs, talking to doms. I also did enormous amounts of visual research. Yes, it was very fun, but a lot of it was actually to figure out what would be possible when the legs don't work. How would you get around certain issues?
It's an undeniable part that part of the BDSM lifestyle is the pain versus pleasure aspect. And, of course, being differently abled, that's going to affect your pain versus pleasure aspect of anything.
I did actually include that. There is mention of the fact that his pain threshold, how long he can handle certain things, has altered. In fact, he's actually upset about it at one point, going, I swear I can do better. I used to be able to. Really, I can. And it's that difference of, because now he lives in a totally different physicality than he used to. And in his case, it was a matter of a gay bashing that lost him the use of his legs. But it still went from Mr. could do anything that he wanted to and, you know, was very popular at the clubs, to believing he couldn't even be a sub anymore because he couldn't do X, Y, and Z. I mean, if your legs don't work, how do you kneel? If your legs don't work, how do you stand when you're braced against something? You know, there's all these little things he can't do. So it really got into I had to do so much research. And I love the fact that the BDSM community and lifestyle is, they want the stories told where they're actually real. So you say, hey, look, I've got this particular issue. Can somebody please help me work through how it would actually be done? And you're going to have a bunch of doms and subs going, hey, I'll help with that. So getting the feedback was really, really helpful. So, yeah, the research was fun, and it was extremely intensive.
I can imagine. Now, Joe, I want to ask you, writing, like, there, that's something that I think is really interesting, writing a play, writing a book coming from a theater or a movie perspective, and it honestly is very appealing to me because I think that's an awesome way to approach something. Is how was it for you as far as you said that you had worked with some pretty famous actors and then to transition into the world of writing? Tell me about your transition from one into the other.
Yeah, well, I did work with famous people. I did A Midsummer Night's Dream with Bruce Willis, Roar the Grease Paint, these are plays, with Nathan Lane, an AT&T industrial with Rosie O'Donnell. And so I did get to work with a lot of famous people, and it was really fun. And what happened was the acting work started to dry up, and I started writing plays. And ironically, one act play I wrote that was very successful, Infatuation, I then morphed and expanded into the novella in Infatuation. And so there's a direct link right there with the playwriting and the writing. But the nice thing about writing novels is you don't have to wait for a producer to produce it. When you write a play, you have to wait for a producer to raise money and to want to do it, to contract it. With a novel, you just sit in your study, you hear all these voices, you get all dramatic, you write all this, you pour your heart out, you laugh, you cry, you put it all together, you do a lot of drafts, and then a publisher publishes it, and that's it. You don't need an ensemble of people and millions of dollars to to come in and put it up. So I actually like the novel writing better. And I have to tell you something funny my mother said. My mother said to me, "Don't you have anything better to do than sit around and write novels?" I wonder if Shakespeare's mother said that. What's wrong with that? But actually then when I was a teenager and told her I wanted to be an actor, she was cutting vegetables. And she said to me, "Oh, that's nice. Would you do me a favor and take this knife and stick it through my heart?" She doesn't like anything in the art. Which is amazing that this is where I ended up. Yeah, I ended up in the arts. But yeah, I mean, I totally think there's a connection. And I think it makes me a better novelist that I was an actor and a playwright, because I know about emotions and feelings and different things. But it's a lot better being a novelist. You don't have to rely on so many people, and so much going on to put up a play nowadays. It gets more and more expensive, and it's difficult.
And you always get the cast that you actually want
into,
in your head.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
So
I didn't hear that. Yeah.
Go ahead. Step up.
What I said that you always get the cast that you want in your head.
Yeah. Yes.
You never have to argue with anybody else about, no, I want this guy, not this one, because in your head it is the guy you wanted. Always.
Right. Just like Matt Bomer is the guy I want. So
there you go.
That's very clear. And if he's listening, please contact me, Matt, because we have to talk.
All right. So I have to ask both of you guys, are you able to write full-time, or is that an ambition of something that you want to do, or do you enjoy keeping it on the side? Because sometimes having it as a financial responsibility, it's your primary source of income, can make it more stressful. So what do you guys think about that? We'll start with Tempest on this one and then go to Joe.
Well, actually writing, well, other than being a parent, it is my full-time job. Unfortunately, my health tends to be obnoxious and get in the way. But when I can, you know, beat the health monster back, it is what I do and it is what I love. I would love to be able to write more, but that's a matter of, you know, health reality, not an evil day job getting in the way. For a lot of people, I know that that's not real, not a realistic or even a wanted goal, but for me, I love writing. There's nothing better than sitting there with my laptop, letting the insanity in my head have fun and pour out onto the page.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm a college professor and department head, so my days are full. However, unlike a lot of writers who write in the morning, I write at night, and I find that being a little tired opens up my creativity. I don't block myself. I don't stop. I'm even sometimes surprised the next day what I've written, but I actually like working it. Yeah, I'll write from 9 o'clock at night till midnight, and it's good. I really like it. I don't think I would change it. I really like that. Just being a little tired helps me.
Okay.
Can I ask Tempe a question?
Sure, absolutely.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. Here, with an infatuation, I've gotten so many email fan letters from women, from straight women, who love the story about two guys, a love story.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely adore it. I mean, I cannot tell you how many. And so I wonder, as a straight woman, what attracted you to writing about men and love? I think it's wonderful, but I wonder, and if you can, and what did it, how did the, do you think maybe these readers got attracted?
Well, see, I can't answer that from personal experience because I'm not a straight woman.
Okay, sorry, I made an assumption.
Now, if you read my bio, it actually lists me as a gender fluid.
Okay.
So I have female days, and biologically I am, but I'm also omnisexual. So the whole straight thing just never worked for me, even though I grew up in a family where that was the only acceptable way to exist. I just, I decided to make my own little mold because theirs just didn't work for me. But I do know a lot of women really get into the MM genre, whether it's the light, the kink, the just pure romance. And I've asked people why. Mm-hmm. And one of the weirdest answers I've ever gotten is because reading about girl parts is icky, which I always thought was really like, but you're female. Why are you upset about? Yeah. And they're like, that's just gross. I'm like, okay, so girl bits is gross, but boy bits aren't. That's fine with me. Go for it. Like I said, I don't really get the logic, but that's the answer that I usually get. I just was always good with it because, I mean, growing up, my best friend was gay and more than once made out in front of me. And damn, if anything was hotter, I don't know what it could be. So it was, you know, I was very warped very young. And it was just, you know, I always thought that that was really hot. And when I sat down to write, that's not what I wrote first, because I did actually write, well, I can't really call it het, more poly first. But all of my stuff that's actually published is all male-male romance because that's where my heart is. But
great.
I get a lot of questions, a lot of emails from women. But the cool part on mine, I actually get a lot of guys writing me.
Good.
I
good for you.
Love those. I have an entire file of nothing but emails from people that have read different stories. And the women tend to gush. The guys usually only bother writing if there's like something mega that touches them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten emails from guys that have EDS. I've gotten emails from guys that use forearm crutches or wheelchairs and like seeing themselves in the story.
Right.
Women just
That's
like to
great.
Get their kink on.
Uh-huh. I think it's great. I just wondered where it came from. It surprised me, to be honest, but I think it's wonderful. Any woman who wants to read about two men, good for them. Kudos to you. That's what I say.
Well,
I know gay guys who read femme.
Okay.
Don't ask me the logic
Here's
there because I don't get it either.
Yeah.
Here's my other side of the coin, though. Like, I think that women reading two men together is awesome. I think that's spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that ultimately we're getting to this point in society where it's more of an acknowledgement of love is love is love. But I think that there are people that read MM as sort of like a fetish kind of thing, And mm-hmm. that's where I kind of go, wait a minute, you took it too far, because
right.
it's no longer
yeah.
a love is love is love. It's like, no, I think the idea of two guys getting it on in front of me is hot. And it's like,
right.
well, what's your reasoning behind this? Because using it to get off, then
mm-hmm.
it's no better to me than if you're reading an MF or an FF novel and just using it to get off. It's masturbatory material, which there's nothing wrong with it, of course, but
mm-hmm.
I don't want to be a fetish. I don't. That,
right.
That's just not
right.
something that makes me
right.
happy when I think about it. So
yeah.
we're getting down to the tail end of the conversation. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was going to say that I don't want my work seen that way, even though I include fetish in some of my work. I still don't want my work seen as fetish. You know, I write erotic
right.
romance, not erotica. There's a reason for my sex, and the sex is not the point of the story. I actually want
right.
people to read the actual story part, because it's
right.
the hearts that matter, not what the body parts are doing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
All right, so we're getting
at least
to
for
the
me.
End of our show. And I want to give both of you the opportunity to tell people where they can find you and what you're working on currently, what they're going to be expecting from you in the next couple of months. But, so let's start out with Joe, and then Tempest, I want you to tell people. If you keep it to like a minute or so, that would be great.
Sure.
So,
well,
Joe,
my website, yeah, my website's the best way. It's Joe Cosentino without a space. So Joe, then Cosentino. Weebly.com. And I just finished a new MM romance novella called A Shooting Star. And I also, as I mentioned, have the Jana Lane series, starting with Paper Doll and Porcelain Doll, be out in 6 months. And then the summer, I start the Nikki and Noah series, starting with Drama Queen, and then Drama Muscle will be out about 6 months later. And those latter two are the mysteries that I had mentioned before. So I love to hear from readers. So please go to my website and say anything you want to say about my books or my things you've read about me, particularly Matt Bomer. If he can go to my website and contact me, that would be great.
Or Mario. Mario would work too.
Yeah, Mario would be good. Yeah, both of them. Let's say both.
Oh, God.
Yes,
oh, gosh. I'm throwing in some John Berman and some Neil Patrick Harris. If you're listening,
yeah.
those are mine.
Yeah.
So,
hell yeah.
You know,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please.
Tempest,
yes,
you're
yes.
up.
Well, to find me, the easiest way is to go to my website, and that would be Tempest O'Reilly, no dot in between, .com. I try to keep it simple, even if my name is spelled kind of oddly. And on there, you find not only my blog, but my regular website. I've got all my book list and everything in each one of my books. I give you all the nice, lovely links, and you even get character bios for my main characters there. Currently, I have one book submitted, and that's Whiskers of a Chance, which is my lovely paranormal. And I am working on the next Desires Entwined book, which is Simon and Adrian's story. And anybody who's read my other stories knows exactly who they are. So I'm having tons of fun with that. Unfortunately, that's all I have right now. I've got about 10 other stories to write, but those are the only ones current. And I'm always, always love hearing from readers. And you can find all my contact information back over there on TempestO'Reilly.com also. I love hearing from people.
Me too.
So I want to thank being on the show. For anybody who wants to find out more information from these authors, please make sure that you visit the WritersOnlineNetwork.com website. And this episode will be posted tomorrow, as well as by links for both of these authors, so that you'll be able to find them easily. Thank you so much to everybody who's listening. Thank you to you guys. Check out writersonline.com and find out what you can do with the network around you.